What's up, fungal associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. Emphasis on other related topics today, Casey.
Ooh, Alex.
I am one of your hosts, Alex Croson, sitting along here with Mr. Jonathan Casey Clapp.
Alexander Croson.
Not my name.
Not my name either.
Wow, it's a truce.
I am John Casey Clapp. There is no thin.
I see. I am Alex Kurt Croson. How about that?
Actually, I believe I knew that, but I didn't think about it before I said that.
Yeah.
So now my brain, I think, was just like, this will be good without checking with the rest of my brain. And it just came out. But it turns out the rest of my brain actually had given it a thumbs up from like deep in the ether.
That's kind of your MO, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, in Star Wars, they're like, shoot first, like, or no, someone says like,
shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think I talk first, ask questions
think
later.
Think later?
Yeah, think later. Yeah. And then ideally, if I can keep talking while my brain catches up, and then I can correct all the things as I say them.
Yes.
No one knows.
Yeah, no one knows.
Nobody knows, Alex.
I have a pretty good idea for making this podcast with you.
Yeah, you're nah, anyway.
Casey, listen. Today, this episode is we'll just say it. This episode is controversial.
It is. It's controversial. That's without a doubt.
From the very beginning, you and I, every week, without fail, have talked about
without fail
a tree.
Specifically,
this week we are, I'm going to say, kind of talking about a somewhat of a tree.
You know, I think that's fair. I think we should still say we're talking about a tree, maybe not like the tree in terms of like, I don't know. How are we defining it anymore, Alex? We're taking a risk. That's
yes,
what we're doing.
And we hope that you, the faithful fungal associate, will follow us off this this plank.
It's a cliff, and we're looking down, and we're just going to jump and hope that our wings will catch sail.
Hey, out of Daedalus and Icarus, which one are you, and which one am I? I feel like I'm probably the child. Is that Icarus?
Icarus flies too close to the sun.
That's the sun.
And his dad makes wings of wax, and yes, they melt, and then he falls to the earth.
Right.
I don't know who Daedalus is.
I think you might be Daedalus.
Is Daedalus a different person?
I think that's the father.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I'm telling you then, don't go too close to the sun, son.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
And I wave at you as
go.
I do.
And I'm like, no.
The metaphor isn't perfect, but what we're saying,
it's not perfect,
is today we are not talking about necessarily a tree, but we're talking about a tree colloquially.
We are
talking about a plant called the Chinese windmill palm.
That is right. Is everyone okay? Are you still there? Alex, I think they're gone.
I'm sure some people will feel very passionately about this, and we'll hear from those people. I'm sure.
Oh yeah,
99% of people don't give a shit, which are my people. Thank you.
Thank you. We're here for you.
So Casey, as we do every episode, let's imagine that you and I are walking through. I was going to say China, but it could be, you know, Portland.
Yeah,
here.
It really could. In fact, there's a, what is it? There's a, it's like a Spanish adobe looking building just down the street from where we are right now.
Yeah.
And I believe that's when you first saw those. And
yes,
you're like, what? Why? How?
There are a couple square blocks in my neighborhood that look like they were plucked out of California and fit like a puzzle piece
like
into
Southern California.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Casey, we come across some Chinese windmill palms.
We sure do.
Let us ID this tree.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, without your inflection, we wouldn't have known that
I had
there were
to,
air quotes.
I had to make a big motion because you were looking down.
I know.
And I had to make it.
And I could see it from the corner of my eye. That's how big these quotes are.
Yeah.
Okay, Alex. We're walking through literally anywhere in kind of the temperate zone or anywhere in the high elevation, not quite temperate zones in China.
Yeah.
That's where these trees normally are known to grow. They have been in cultivation from China and Japan for many, 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 many centuries. So like all those trees, we're actually not 100% sure where they came from. there's not like a big native population that we say, oh yeah, they're certainly from here. We just kind of see them growing all over the place. And mm-hmm. so we say, well, I think this is probably where they're from.
And Casey, just to clarify, this yeah. is Trachycarpus
yeah.
Fortunii.
That's it. Yeah. Fortunii. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Named after Robert Fortune.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you're going to be surprised. He's a Scottish botanist.
Of course he's a Scotch
botch. All Scottish.
Those Scotch botches
seriously.
Are all over this goddamn podcast.
I can't, I'm really amazed. But honestly, if there is certainly something that Scotland has given the world, it's Scotch botches.
Thanks for your botches, Scotches.
Yeah, this is what we need.
Do you think a I Love Scottish Botanists t-shirt is too niche?
You know, I don't. I think that that is exactly what we need. And then if anyone has any questions, you just need to roll your eyes as if you're like, everyone knows, and yeah. just keep walking.
It's like the I Heart New York t-shirt, but it's yeah. I Heart Scottish Botanists.
Yeah, exactly. So SB.
Yeah.
SB small s. All right, Alex. So this is a broadleaf evergreen tree.
Okay.
If we're really just putting it down in brass tacks, that's what it is. It is a palm, though. And a palm is a not specific thing. It's more just a description. So everyone says palm tree. It is a very classic. Everyone right. uses that terminology,
yeah.
which we will get into. But suffice it to say, other people who don't want to deal with that just say palm.
Right.
It is a palm. So a palm could be a small shrub like saw palmetto or a palmetto of any sort. It could be a tall tree like a date palm, or in this case, the Chinese windmill palm, also called the chasun palm, which is, I believe, where it's from.
So we're kind of using the word tree here as a technique.
Yes.
Not as a
exactly.
botanical term.
If you have any idea what we're talking about, or rather, if you don't have any idea, go back and listen to the Catalpa yes. episode, Bignonioides. That one discusses this in depth.
Yeah.
So yes, this is a technique of a palm, which I think palms actually really show that technique and that variety very well, where you could have a very short palm that has multiple stems, or you could have a very tall palm that grows up, has one big long stem in the very middle, and then a big puff of foliage on the very top.
Yeah.
Now, each one of those puffs comes from a bud, which is at the very tip of that tall stem, which is made up of a bunch of bundles. And that, again, is something we'll get into a little bit later. But you're going to see a palm when you see this plant. You're going to know, or maybe have a clue, that it is a Chinese windmill palm, because if you see it outside of its normal habitat, it's probably going to be growing at really high latitudes. Okay. So, for instance, we're in Oregon. You can find that growing in Oregon, and you would not find any other palms growing here except maybe one or two other small species. For example, there is the European or Mediterranean fan palm, which is Camarops humilis, that also grows really high in latitude. So these two are like just reaching way up high. Again, the windmill palm actually grows high in elevation. So if you lower the elevation but move it up in latitude, you kind of get the same temperature gradients and moisture. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they're obviously not native to this area, but they can grow here if planted.
Precisely, yeah. Okay. So if you're in a place that doesn't usually have your fauna does not include palm-like plants.
Yeah.
And you see one growing that's like maybe 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
Most likely that is a windmill palm, Chinese windmill palm.
I like this ID by elimination.
Yeah. Honestly, sometimes that's the best way to ID a tree.
Yeah.
You can just be like, all the others don't belong here. Therefore, this must be this other one.
Probably a CWP.
Yeah, exactly. So the each one of those big, long palm leaves is in fact one big gigantic leaf. So the leaves are something like 1.5 meters across, 1.25. And that is like 3 or 4 feet across, but that is going out to the very ends of their little fingers, where their big circular fan kind of rips apart into individual little blades.
Leaflets?
You would call them leaflets, but I don't know if I would go that far. It is kind of it's hard to define for these because at the base, all of those leaflets are connected.
Okay.
And they're palmately veined. So it makes you think that they're actually just a very deeply incised, sharply, not even serrated, just a sharply incised leaf.
Deep, deep lobes.
Yes, exactly. And so they're circular, and they have a big, long petiole, about 40 to 50 little segments, each one of those little fingers that are coming out, which have one vein going down the middle.
Okay.
And so they are all parallel veined would be something that's going to come up later.
Oh, wow. This is a new term, I think.
Yes, parallel veinage.
Yeah, so what? Can you define it more specifically?
Yes, I totally can. Cool. Essentially, you have a petiole that comes up, and then when the leaf blade starts coming from that petiole, all of the veins go parallel to each other up and out.
Okay.
They're not what's called reticulated, where a reticulated vein comes up and then splits and then splits and then splits.
I see.
So all the other leaves that you've ever seen, maybe it's a maple leaf, they all have maybe 5-7 veins that start and then they all radiate out from a single point, but then they also break off from there and then break off more and break off more. So by the time you're looking at it, the veins are not all almost exactly parallel with each other. So reticulated just means that it kind of branches off, then branches off, then branches off, then branches off.
Okay.
Most things in the lily family, or that are what we're going to bring up a little later, monocots, they have these parallel veins. So
the word of the day.
The word of the day.
Monocot.
Monocot. Today's episode is brought to you by the letter M. Monocot.
Give us your best Elmo impression, Case.
I don't know if I can. I've yelled this entire last weekend.
Okay.
So I don't even know if I can go that high. Sorry, Alex. Why don't you give us your best Elmo impression?
I'm busy.
Said Elmo.
Oh, I almost did it, and then I shied away. It is hard to do it.
I thought you were just like, I'm busy, and that was you being Elmo.
No,
I was like, it's a really bad impression of Elmo.
I'm too busy to do the impression.
Okay, sorry. You are actively working right now.
Yeah, man.
Well, that big long petiole is about a meter long, so it's like 3 to 4 feet long. They get huge, and they have really sharp serrated edges on the side of it. So as that leaf comes out, it's really, really sharp. And generally, in the habitats where it's kind of more native over in Southeast Asia, then the ends of those leaflets, we'll call them, kind of stick straight up and they don't really bend. But then if you get them over into their non-native habitats, all those leaflets tend to kind of bend down towards gravity. So their ends kind of go and just kind of hang down.
Yeah.
And of course, the big thing that's going to tell you that this is a palm tree is those leaves. Each one has this big, intense base that connects to the stem. And the palmness of it is that it has those big palm-like, you know, leaves, those big, huge, circular, fan-shaped leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're all connected onto a single stem. I don't think there is an example that I know of this species having more than one stem.
Oh.
And that is a very specific thing to the palms. Most of them, not all certainly, but most will have a single stem and they will not branch.
So that's a point in the tree category now.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, we got to keep track of that. That's a tree point. One single stem that grows taller than like 15 feet, you can definitely walk beneath it.
Let's update the board.
Update the board. What do we got there, Johnny?
2 points under tree.
That's what I'm talking about, Johnny. Thank you very much. Everyone, Johnny, it's his first day.
Wow, a new character in our canon.
Yeah, honestly.
Johnny.
Really, yeah, old Johnny. Old Johnny the announcer.
Oh, boy.
So, it turns out that the leaf, or the main trunk, rather, is made up of a bunch of bundles.
Hmm.
And all of those bundles start right at the base with a little teeny tiny bud right on top. That bud kind of gets bigger really fast, and that is the growing tip of the palm plant.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You ever heard of palm hearts?
Yeah, hearts of palm,
yeah,
I've heard of.
That is the topmost growing bud, the apical meristem that this plant has. And that is where everything comes from. So it's like this big, very well-protected top growing point. And then it will put out new leaves that kind of unfurl and then pull themselves out. And they're usually like really kind of tight. And they kind of go whoop, and just kind of unfurl themselves like a flag.
Okay.
The bases of those leaves are what make that big shaggy top on these stems.
Hmm.
So only the top grows up. Because it is a bunch of vascular bundles down there, the trunk itself, and this is a knot tree point, does not have what's called secondary growth. It does not grow outwards.
Right, Casey. This is a big one.
This is a big one. This is why most people would have said, many people that I know, they completely out of hand say, this is not a tree. It doesn't grow wood. Done. It's grass.
This is a, you know what, Casey? This tree is a robbed jeweler. It has no rings.
It's got none. It's exactly right. That was so good, Alex.
I have to quit.
Yeah, you got to go. So, so it does not grow annual rings.
Yeah. This so if you thing. Cut into it, it's mm-hmm. just solid
fibers.
Material.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it is. Yeah. And we'll kind of get into the anatomy in a little bit.
Okay.
But suffice it to say that the stem is made up of all these vascular bundles. And those vascular bundles, at the very beginning, when they first start right at the bottom of that that apical growing point,
yeah,
that's where the big, gigantic leaf bases attach. So those leaf bases attach to the outside of this bundle, and then as those leaves fall off or die or whatever, maybe they're pruned off, those outer bundles, or those the bundles, then have this outer layer of the base of the leaf. Does that make sense, Alex?
Can you say it one more time? I kind of zoned out.
All right.
I think there's a lot happening, and I'm also, you know, I'm not with it. I don't know a lot of these things.
That's all right. We're gonna try this one more time.
Okay.
All
let's right. do it.
So you have this growing tip.
Yes.
That growing tip has below it a bunch of vascular bundles. That's what makes up the structure of the plant.
Buy me dinner first, Casey.
Whoa, Alex. You're all right. Fine. You got it. So you got that growing tip, you got those vascular bundles, they're having a good time. Every year, that growing tip grows up a little bit.
Okay.
I know, Alex.
We need a video component in this podcast. So Casey is doing some really interesting hand motions.
Well, Alex, that's not on our Patreon. You can find that on our fans only page.
Fans only?
Is it only fans? What is it? Dang it. I think I get that wrong
no,
every single time.
No, we had to
time.
Make a new website for nature-related...
sexual imagery?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. It's going to be a lot of mushrooms on that one.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of birds fucking.
Disgusting. So you have this this stem. Now, a lot of people know about this stem being very hairy and having like a bunch of stuff on the outside.
Mm.
That stuff is the old bases of the leaf, where that big long meter and a half long petiole, the big gigantic meter and a half big fan,
yeah,
when that dies and they cut it off, that really strong fibrous bit is just all around the outside. So there's a bunch of, like, imagine you take your hand and you clasp all your fingers together and you hold it up like you're about to, you know, have a big gulp in your hand, right?
Sure.
So that connects on to one side of this vascular bundle, this sheath, this stem.
I'm imagining sort of a celery stalk.
Yes.
The way celery connects to the...
That is so perfect, Alex. Thank you. I was struggling so hard.
Yes,
you did
I got
it.
You. I got you.
Now imagine all those celery stalks around a single bunch of vascular bundles.
Yes.
That together makes up the stem of a Chinese windmill palm.
Wow, Casey, you did it.
Oh my God, barely. I don't think I did. I think you did it, actually.
I still don't totally understand, but that's okay.
Well, anyway, suffice it to say, it only grows up. It doesn't grow out.
Yes.
And that's why you get, like, you go down to LA or anywhere else where there's, like, palms planted maybe 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're just these long, skinny spindles growing straight up.
Yeah.
They've never gotten bigger in diameter. Even at the base, the only thing that has happened is that at the base, these plants will grow adventitious roots right from the stem, right from that very base, and they'll just keep on growing more and more roots, so they look like they're getting bigger in diameter.
Yeah,
but they are not. They're just putting out new roots that are kind of on top of each other, so they kind of get a little bit of a wider base,
kind of a thick buttress base, not the opposite of a buttress base, like a convexed buttress base.
Yes, that's more like it. Yeah, yeah.
It exactly. almost looks like a burl at the bottom of them.
Yeah,
like,
it kind of does.
Like,
yeah,
a big root ball.
Precisely. And this is the same for all palms. None of them grow wider.
That's very
they
fascinating.
They all grow up.
Yeah, I've seen those Southern California palms. Those, mm-hmm. those motherfuckers are tall.
They are. They really are. And they're really strong. Like, you got to give them credit. I've seen, like, palm trees, coconut palms or other tropical palms look like they've been destroyed in a hurricane. But they're, like, the only things that will, like, stay up and not get completely destroyed.
Wow.
In a hurricane with wind or anything. They're very, very strong.
Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. So, very strong, not woody, and the big thing is they are still flowering plants. They are angiosperms. So, last week or the week before, we talked about the drupe, right? Turns out that this also makes a drupe.
Are you kidding me?
Zoop, fruit, right? Droop fruit,
droop
riot.
Fruit riot.
Yes. Thank you, Alex.
Droop fruit riot.
Man, I knew. So they actually have these big, long panicles of flowers, and then those will all turn into these lovely, lovely blue fruit.
Are they edible?
You know, I don't think these ones are. Some are, like the date palm. You can eat that.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's a lot of other little palm fruits that you can eat.
Love a date.
What's that?
I love a date.
Yeah, there you go. That comes from a palm. The famous Judean date palm, in fact, most of the time.
Oh, yes, of Caesar's Delight. Eh? Mm,
that is the one.
Casey, as we said earlier, the word of the day is monocot.
That's right.
The number of the day, I have a little bit of a reveal.
Ooh.
This episode is episode 69.
What?
Just saying.
that just means so much.
And let us all say nice together. Ready?
Nice.
Casey, we have a lot more to say about monocots after this short break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Chinese windmill palm. You know, like Dr. Evil, Casey?
Who's yeah.
Tree.
A tree.
Yeah, that's fun.
So this tree is having a really good time.
What a fun film, huh?
Yeah, honestly, hasn't aged that well.
But, it's not great. I watched it somewhat recently, actually, and it had a lot of good laughs in it, Casey.
I liked it. When I was younger, I had memorized the second one to the point where I recall at a family reunion, I did the entire show. Like I said, here's how it starts. Here's what happens next. And I like quoted it and all this stuff. It was a great time. Probably was like a 45-minute presentation to all my younger cousins.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's when I'm getting up and going to get some punch.
Like, Alex.
Leave Casey to this.
Sit down.
I already know it by heart, Casey.
All right. That's fair. That's fair.
Casey, today we're talking the Chinese windmill palm. Also known as
a palm tree.
The Latin Chasun, name, of course.
Chasun palm. Oh, you're thought. Oh, I see. Trachycarpus fortuni.
Trachycarpus fortuni.
Do. Yes. You could also probably go fortuni.
I like saying fortunii.
Yeah. That feels better because it feels more Latin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, after all, Latin. Casey, as we said before the break, the word of the day is monocot.
Yep.
Now, this is exciting for me because I don't really know what a monocot is. I know the word mono means one.
Yep.
As in monotheistic.
There it is. One theist.
Uh-huh.
One god.
I don't know what cot means, and I'm excited to learn.
This is very exciting.
I'm assuming it's not a little bed that you sleep on in a hotel room.
Not in this case.
Casey, let's talk Chinese windmill palm and monocots.
All right. So monocot is in fact short for monocotyledon.
Oh, right.
Versus dicotyledon.
Okay.
And this is essentially a split, two different clades, but this is actually a little bit called into question, that split the kinds of angiosperms down the middle, or not down the middle, they just split them into one thing or the other. So at the very, 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 very beginning of a plant's life, there's a seed. That seed has a little teeny tiny radical that comes down.
That's right.
And that is the root. It's the very, very beginning. It is the fetus or the root that's attached to the fetus. So what is it?
The umbilical cord.
Yeah, that's what we're going to say. It's exactly it.
The tap root. The tap root. You've called it before, it's, I believe. Yeah,
it is the very beginning of the tap root. In this case, for the monocots, it actually kind of stays as a thing, but it's really just the microscopic thing that starts touching inside the seed next to the germ, and it starts to grow down. Alex?
I have another merch idea, Casey.
Oh, what is that?
The word taproot in the tap out font.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to get sued.
That's a lot of fun.
That's a lot of fun, Alex. That's a lot of fun.
Thanks.
So you have this, this first little thing coming down. It's a little radical.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two leaves, or the one leaf that comes up, splits them again. So have you ever seen, I'm going to show you a picture because you have seen this. The first little teeny tiny vestiges of a plant.
I love that, Casey.
It's the teeny tiniest little first green things that pop up from the ground, right?
There is an emoji of that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That emoji is a dicotyledon emoji because the cotyledons are those two first primordial little leaves that come up.
I see.
So in a monocot, there is but a single cotyledon that comes up from that little germ eating whatever leftovers have been packed in the seed.
So a cotyledon is just the first, is either the first or one of the first leaves that comes out of the top of a seed.
It is actually the very first.
Okay.
By definition.
Right. So isn't that not what I said?
You said or some of the first.
Right, because dicot.
Yes. So dicot, there are two firsts.
Yes.
They happen at the same exact time.
Twins.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
Monocot. Congrats. Just has the one.
Okay.
These are the embryonic leaves or the cotyledons.
Can we quickly go over some other plants that are monocots? So most trees are going to be dicot.
Yes, correct.
Like all conifers?
Conifers, out of this question entirely.
Because they're not angiosperms.
Exactly. This is only the flowering plants in the angiosperm clade.
And gymnosperms, conifers are gymnosperms.
Yes, correct.
Wow, okay.
Alex, beautiful. Well done.
Thanks, Casey.
That was really good.
What's happened to me?
Honestly, you've just, your botanical heart has grown three times today.
I sound, you know, like Johnny Cash, like, what have I become?
You're just like sitting here, you look on your wall, stunned, you have botanist honorarium degrees everywhere. What?
A moment of clarity.
Yeah.
Okay, so other monocots, like a tomato plant.
Is a dicot.
All right. Let's say a tulip.
A tulip is a monocot. Congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming most flowers are going to be monocot.
Incorrect.
I'm assuming most flowers are going to be dicot. So I'm going to edit it.
That
like
is correct.
Made it sound like I was right.
Oh, well done, Alex. I'll give you a couple big ones.
Yeah,
right off the bat.
This is where we get to a point where like maybe you should just do it.
But I love
of
listening to you me just incorrectly make guesses. Guessing. Well, it also is a little bit of a challenge for me because then I have to be like, is that or is that not? And then come up with it.
So, oh, yeah.
It's a little bit of fun.
I'm assuming it makes for great radio.
Oh, everyone's loving this. Okay, all right. I'll just give you the big easy one right off the bat.
All right, thanks.
Grass.
Grass, monocot.
Grass is a monocot.
Okay.
Also, bamboo is a monocot.
Okay.
So anytime you get a bamboo that's popping up, it's always going to have that one single thing coming up.
Is bamboo a grass?
Bamboo is a grass. It is in the grass family, Poaceae.
Is the Chinese windmill palm a grass?
Depends on who you talk about. They are in a different family called the Ericaceae, which is the palm family.
Okay.
And the big difference is, of course, the fruit and the flower.
I see.
So those are some of the big hitters. Another couple bit of the big hitters, lilies. Everything that is a lily or in the lily family, that is one.
Is lily a pretty big family?
Lily's huge, actually. Yeah, it's got a lot.
Shout out to lily.
Yeah, definitely shout out to lily. In fact, lily is so high that the lilioid, they call them the lilioid monocots now. So like it used to be the liliales as opposed to the magnoliales. That was the
whoa.
Magnoliales was the really high taxonomic thing for the dicots.
Yeah.
And Lily Ales was the one for the monocots.
Okay.
Because they were like, there's so many and they were so iconic that they'd say, this is the Lily family. Then above the Lily family is the next thing, which, what is that? That's, I think it would have been Lily a Day. They just have been changing this a lot recently.
Keeps the doctor away?
Yeah, a Lily Day keeps the doctor away. So always make sure to have just a little bit of a Lily family.
Sounds all right to me.
Well, it turns out that they would, essentially, that is the two big things. So remember how I said years ago that magnolias are one of the most ancient and primitive kinds of flowers?
Yeah.
So that is because they are that, then everything else that looks similar to them, they've said essentially is some kind of ancestral relation to the oldest thing that is, in fact, the magnolias.
Okay.
It's not quite exactly true, but at the time when we decided to come up with this, that's kind of the assumption that was made, so we just kind of stick with precedent whether or not it's, you know, truly factual.
I see.
Same kind of thing with the lilies. They're like, this is like the perfect, most primordial example of what it would be like. So they kind of named them off of that. They're also both very well-known, magnolias and lilies.
Sure.
So you kind of get a little bit of whatever. But those plants are the type species for this big order. Now, it's not 100% true, but let me just give you a couple bits that if you are trying to think, well, what makes a thing other than like... We know that one has one cotyledon coming up.
Yeah.
The other has two.
Right.
Why does that put them in these big, massively different families?
Yeah.
So that is the kind of a question that I think scientists have really addressed years ago when they kind of say, well, what makes things different or related? And with humans and mammals and things like that, you can look at the embryos and you can see that almost all the embryos of mammals really start looking extremely similar. And then once they start to change and really start to develop, then you start to see these different things happen in different ways.
I see. So the cotyledons for these di and monocots look similar across species.
Yeah, exactly.
Until they don't.
Well, in fact, remember how you said the first or the almost first, the first few leaves?
Yeah.
So the first leaves are either one cotyledon, a monocot, right, or dicot, which are these two. The leaves that then follow after that are what's called the true leaves. And the true leaves then will have at least, if not 100%, the same, they'll look really similar to whatever leaves come next.
Okay.
And the conifers, I should note, they also have cotyledons, but they are not one or two. They actually come up with many times like 15 or 13 or 7 or 3 or something like that. Some only come up with two, and then they change after that. But
little needles?
Yeah, just little adorable needles kind of. But the thing is, they also have the same kind of thing where every monocot starts with this one cotyledon, then everything after that is different towards whatever species it is. Same thing with the dicots. These two leaves that look almost, you know, exactly the same, they just like two little green kind of things coming out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
Then everything after that starts to look like the actual, whatever the venation, whatever the leaf characteristics are from the maple. Then it'll start taking on those appearances.
This is very fascinating, Casey. Yeah. So I'm going to recap a little bit.
Please do.
For myself and others. There are, in the angiosperm clade.
Yes.
There are sort of two types of plants.
Mm-hmm.
Monocot, short for monocotyledon.
Yes.
One cotyledon.
Correct.
And dicot,
yes,
short for two cotyledons.
Correct.
So the monocots, the very first thing to come out of both of these is a little root.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, monocots send up one little baby leaf.
Yes.
The dicots send up two little baby leaves.
Yes. And these would be the embryonic, like pre-leaves.
Right.
Technically.
This is the image of a human embryo that looks like a little baby, like pig or something.
Exactly. Or rather, you just can't tell because they all look exactly the same.
Yeah. Like a little goob with two black dots for eyeballs.
That's it.
And then, so these cotyledons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may look the same as other plants. Like a dicot looks like a dicot, looks like a dicot.
Yeah.
Until the next leaves, the true leaves, come out, and then you can start to identify it.
That's exactly right.
So what happens to the cotyledons? Do they just like fall away and die?
Yeah, pretty much. They just kind of, once the main leaves take over, then the tree starts producing its own food.
Okay, they're just there to get the party started.
Exactly. They just get there, they say, yep, we got some sun, I'm going to make a little bit of photosynthesis.
Oh.
Then the next leaves come up, and the next leaves are like, no, we're making the photosynthesis.
Like they act as leaves and they feed the seed.
Yeah, exactly. But then they also will sometimes stay there. Sometimes they'll just like pop up and then go bleh, and shrivel and die as the next leaves take over and it grows quicker. Yeah, it's exactly right. I will say,
this is very cool.
Certain leaves don't look, certain cotyledons don't look exactly the same. So like everything in the nightshade family, potatoes and tomatoes, they will all the peppers.
Eggplant, I think.
Yes, 100%. If you look at a seed, you take a little seed, you buy it at the seed store, and you plant those, they will all look exactly the same.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden it will pop up and one will be a pepper, one will be a this, one will be a that, but they're all in the same family. All of their cotyledons look really similar.
Okay.
Another plant, like say something in the squash family, so a cucumber, a potato, or a pumpkin, any other kinds of squash. In fact, they're all technically the same thing. What is it? I think cucurbitae pepi, something like that.
Hmm.
They're all exactly the same. Another good friend of the pod, Gabe, we've actually talked about him multiple times. He once told me and sent me an article, all pumpkins and like big squash and zucchini and things, they're all the same exact species. They've just been bred a little bit, and if you let them flower, then they'll basically all turn into the same gourd because they're all the same exact species.
What the hell?
We'll talk about this some other time.
Oh my God, what a tease.
There's some species of vegetables that are all the same. The famous one is brassica. The broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
Those are all the same exact plant, but instead of growing in the same way, they've bred it for different things.
What the
so
hell?
Like one bred it for the leaves, one bred it for the buds, one bred it for a white floret, the other bred it for a green floret.
Freaky.
Real freaky. We'll have to talk about that some of the time, Alex.
Jesus.
But the all the cotyledons for these plants will look exactly the same.
Okay.
So you have, they're not 100% across the board. Every dicot looks exactly the same.
Okay.
But big families and big groups will look exactly the same.
Fair enough.
But ultimately, there's going to be two or there's going to be one. Now, some other things that monocots and dicots have that are a little bit different. Pollen with a single furrow or spore. In monocots, as opposed to dicots, they have pollen with three furrows or pores.
I was expecting two.
I don't really know what that means, to be very clear. That goes into some botany that's way deeper than I can ever go.
Okay.
So we're just going to pass on that. Here's a good one that I've talked about multiple times. Flower parts in multiples of three for the monocots. Lily is the perfect family for this.
Mm-hmm.
Every lily you've seen, a trillium, is also in the lily family. They always have three petals, three sepals, three leaves or leaves that are usually in ones, threes, sixes, nines, things like that. Versus flower parts in multiples of four or five for the dicots.
Your roses.
Your rose family. It's perfect.
Dogwoods.
Most of the peas, they all have five. They're just in a different way.
Okay.
Dogwoods, not quite. But dogwoods, though, those aren't leaves. Actually, no, dogwoods, they do have everything in fours, but the big things that you see, those are bracts in the dogwood,
right?
So there's a little bit different.
Go listen to our dogwood episode. Yeah. I need to.
Jeez, Alex, whoa.
Sorry.
Okay, here's the other thing. Major leaf veins, as we talked earlier, in monocots, they're parallel. In dicots, they're, again, reticulated, which means they kind of branch off from one another.
Right.
The way I think about reticulated is it has a spot where it like bends or turns and goes off in some direction.
Uh-huh.
A reticulated bus are those big double ones. They have like that squishy bit in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a reticulated bus.
Okay.
The stem vascular bundles are scattered, yet most of the time they also, in monocots, have them around the outside. So if you see a monocot vascular bundle system, you're going to see them kind of randomly spread out through the middle of the cross section if you cut through that stem.
Uh-huh.
But then there's going to be like a kind of a big ring around the outside. Like that's where a lot of the heavy lifting is done. Versus stems have vascular bundles in a ring in dicots. This is the big quintessential thing that makes a tree a tree.
Wow.
So in a tree that we're not having air quotes on.
No quotes.
No quotes. You know how they are always well known of growing out in rings, especially in the temperate region where we have our seasonality, right?
That's right.
So the big thing is that all these vascular bundles are out in this outer ring, but they also have developed meristematic tissue, which essentially is stem cells, in this zone we call the cambium, and it will grow out every single year. As opposed to the monocots, all their meristematic tissue is located at the very top of this big vascular bundle.
Mm.
They just took all their power and concentrated it to the very, very top. And they make leaves that are like the size of cars.
Right.
Whereas the dicots, most of the time, the leaves are way smaller. They're not near as like really hard and tough. Some of them are. But for the most part, all their big thing that they did differently is they put a bunch of meristematic tissue surrounding the entire thing. So they are able to get actually woody and develop a new ring of this of these vascular bundles, which we call in trees rings. Each year, it's a new ring of vascular bundles that's put on, so we can see that pattern.
Wow.
Is that going to make sense?
Yeah. So just as much as a tree is a technique.
Mm-hmm.
A monocotism is a technique.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's exactly right.
They're just built differently, but it's mostly the same parts.
It's the same parts, just put in different places.
Sure.
Because they're both angiosperms, so they're all really related. And on top of that, there's a bunch of different ideas where they thought this used to be just two very equal, obvious differences. But that's just not quite the same. One of our resources that we'll have linked is from the Berkeley, one of their museums down at the college there.
Mm.
And they have a very, very simple, easy to read, like almost too easy to read, Alex. You would see it and be like, that's the worst website ever.
Oh, my God.
It's the kind of website that I'm like, yes. No pictures, no anything I need to read through, just long paragraphs of information.
It's a notepad file.
I love it. I love it to death.
In like 6-point font.
It is HTML at its finest.
It's the most rudimentary.
It literally is just called monocots versus dicots, the two classes of flowering plants. And they have a really good discussion in here about what's called paleo herbs, because a lot of people are probably pulling their hair out being like, what about the eudicots? We're going to kind of skip over that, Alex.
What is that? I guess we're going to skip over. You can't tell me.
Essentially, it is the idea that the monocots and dicots, they thought were just these two very specific things.
Yeah.
But it might be that there's evidence that the monocots developed from dicots. So in the evolutionary history, they kind of split, and then the monocots split again. So there's some dicots that have some of those characteristics we went through earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are present in the other group.
Right.
And so it's not so cut and dry. So they're like, well, so that must mean that they've shared some amount of DNA somewhere. And they also have the power to lignify. As I said, bamboo is a monocot, but it gets really hard and woody.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't grow necessarily new rings of wood, but it's really hard and woody enough that, you know, you can support entire structures and you know, things like that.
We build with it, yeah.
So you get these things that's kind of like, well,
that's interesting.
It's not so cut and dry as science wishes that it was.
I like this theory.
And so I think this goes back to what you're saying is that, being a monocot, being a dicot, it might just be a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, the palms, as I said earlier, including the windmill palm, are really, really tough trees. They can grow and get battered by hurricanes. And if you go to some of the like photos or videos where there's just been some devastation in some area because of a hurricane or a tsunami, things like that, the only thing that will be still standing are palm trees.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And as we said before, that there's adventitious roots. They just keep on getting stronger and stronger, but they do it in a way that isn't the same as what other, what we call trees do.
Right.
And now I'm saying it with like a little bit of a pretentious quote here.
Yeah, it was that was a bit aggressive.
Yeah, I wanted to be aggressive because, you know, convincing myself that maybe palms, maybe trees actually should be called fake palms? No. I'm trying to reverse
trees
this
are
out.
Palms in quotes.
Yeah. So what if palms they develop their tree-ness first, and then other trees were like, well, we're going to do it this way, and now
see.
We give them credit for being real trees.
Wow.
Which strategy came first? I ask.
You've turned the hipsters on their ears.
Thank you, Alex. But if we just want to talk about what is the most successful. I think we can probably put grasses and bamboos up pretty high on the success ladder.
Yeah, man.
Like grasses, because of this structure, they will get destroyed because of fire or herbivory, something like that. Then they'll just grow straight back up and they'll just keep going.
And there's just oceans of it.
Yeah,
on,
literally.
You know, across continents.
So it must be a pretty good strategy in terms of living. And you know, if you're going to say, well, a tree is a tree and they're way cooler and they're way bigger, if you want to be a purist and say a tree must have secondary growth, which is a big thing, that's one of the big, like, checks. And a lot of people say that a palm tree is a grass. It is emphatically not a grass.
Okay.
Grasses have blade-like leaves that come out with those parallel veins. I don't think I can think of very many except maybe some bamboos, which are in the grass family. That are that have that fan palm like leaf that comes out. They certainly don't have any big gigantic fruits that come down that we would call anything different. Their fruits are these little tiny seeds like barley and rice and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all in a very, very specific grass category.
Okay, yeah, but don't bamboos grow secondary growth?
Not really. No,
they grow leaves.
They grow leaves, but secondary growth, Alex, is that making diameter rings.
Oh! I'm sorry. I misinterpreted secondary growth as like limbs.
Oh no! Sorry. Limbs, not technically in this case. That is just another primary leader coming out, going left or right.
Got it.
Whereas secondary growth. Is more described as coming off as particularly that meristematic stem cell-like tissue on the outside of the trunk that grows out radially from the middle.
Got it.
That would be secondary growth. So anyway, you know, I think palms are pretty cool. I don't have anything against them.
Casey, it sounds like we're ready for our review.
I think we are. I think we are, Alex. And
let's do it.
I think this is going to be good.
Wow. What a setup. Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on the Chinese windmill palm, this tree, and then give it a rating. Here's my proposal.
Mm-hmm.
0 to 10, golden fronds of honor.
Golden fronds of honor with a D.
Yes.
I think that sounds good.
Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
Oh, right. Alex, I find palms in a few situations great, in other situations abhorrent.
Mm.
I will give you some examples.
Okay.
I find them to be great if they're planted where no other large tree can grow, up here in the Pacific Northwest, where large trees crush it, because up here, it's just a simple fact. Palms don't do very well.
Okay.
If they did, they would already be here. We have them that grow, you know, up into California, in Florida, Mexico, the South. We don't have them up here because other trees were like, hey, you know, hey, we can do this way better. And Palm was like, that's cool. I'm out of here. I'm going to go hang out in warmer climes. If you guys ever want to come down, give me a call. We'll have drinks. It's going to be cool.
A lot of the palms I've seen here, I will say, look kind of pitiful. Like they're struggling.
Yeah. And that's because they're like, I hate it here.
Aww.
It's okay. They don't hate it. They're just, you know, they're really tough. So I give them credit for being tough.
Yeah.
However, you know what? If you can plant a northern red oak or a Douglas fir, you should do that.
Right.
Otherwise, if you are growing them down in a beautiful garden, down in Central or Southern California or in Mexico or anywhere in the tropics,
yes, sir.
That is the quintessentially most beautiful thing. When you're looking up the Trachycarpus fortuni,
yeah.
And you're finding like all these pictures on like a Google image, right? They're like growing in these Chinese valleys with like these huge sheer mountains on either side, and they just look perfectly of that place.
Yes.
That is gorgeous. I'll take it every day of the week.
For sure.
Love seeing them on a beautiful island popping out from the side above the surf, little coconuts hanging and all
yeah.
that. Not the Chinese windmill, but just palms and, you know, in general.
Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome. So that, I think, looks great. I think that is delightful. That is the way it should be. But if you're planting them in, let's say, I don't know, I'm just going to guess of a place, Southern California,
mm-hmm.
and you are like, no, this is like the classic Southern California thing. You plant a palm tree in the street or around your house, and they grow up, they shade nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah. And in fact, they're so like iconic down there, like Hollywood and all that sort of area, that people want them all over the place, but they don't do a damn thing for helping that city not literally burn off the face of this planet.
Great point, Casey.
So many people are like, stop planting these. We have to cut these trees down when they die, and we're going to plant an oak tree or a fig tree or some big, gigantic tree that is going to grow and be gorgeous and big and beautiful and actually do good work.
Yes.
Other times, people are like, no, I just want to plant this beautiful palm tree. And then it grows up and becomes this weird spindly thing that's like 60 feet tall and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the worst. Don't plant them. Plant them in a garden where you can then let it grow up and plant something underneath it.
There you go.
They are not forest trees. They are trees of the forest where they will grow with the forest, in the forest. They do not grow in these big, like, really closed canopy things.
Well Some said. Place,
yeah. So, Alex, having said all that, I'm still gonna have to be like, you know what? I'm gonna give this tree like a 5.6.
Okay.
I just, you
not
know.
Not too bad.
It's not too bad, but yeah, it's just, you know, they're fine. They're just okay in the right place. And I think we could say this about almost every single tree.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to one of those gorgeous valleys in China and I see this, I'm going to send you a text message and we'll be like 8.5 out of 10.
Right.
The perfect place.
Right.
But as it is standing right now, they have a good place. They should be planted infrequently and with other things similar to multiple other trees we've talked about on this show.
Yes.
So 5.6. Also, I don't want any of that hate mail being like, Casey Clapp likes palm trees.
Right.
I'll get canceled in a second.
Front page of the National Enquirer. I was trying to think of National Geographic.
I said National Enquirer.
5.6 golden fronds of honor. For the Chinese windmill palm from dendrologist Casey Clapp.
Yep.
The Chinese windmill palm.
I thought for 1 second you were about to tell a long form poem about this.
I could probably look up a haiku or something.
Yeah. That'd
be fitting. Are haikus Japanese?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, never mind.
They did grow. They're potentially native to that area, but it's very unclear.
Okay. Here's something that is clear, Casey. This is not a tree.
Wow.
It is a tree.
I see.
And as such, I will be giving it a score in quotes as well.
Ooh, okay. All right. This is good.
So I want to make clear to anybody who's keeping track, you know who you are. This is a special occasion, okay?
Yeah.
This is canon, but this isn't like, I don't know. This is like the Star Wars novels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
This isn't like A New Hope. This is like, this is the Thrawn books. I like palms, and I like the Chinese windmill palm. It's got a good name. It's got a single stem. I don't know, Case. I'm not super passionate about it.
Okay.
Whenever I see them in Portland, I think, oh, that's cool. But they also always look like shit.
Yeah.
They're just a big mess. And they're like brown and like really floppy. And like, it's very clear that they are not anachronistic. What's anachronism for place?
Ooh, I would just say out of place.
They're out of place.
They're out of their element.
Yes.
They're a Donny tree.
They are lost geographically. However, if I were to visit one of these beautiful valleys full of palms in China,
yeah,
I'm big into that. As it is, I'm not feeling too passionate about the Chinese windmill palm.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 6.0.
Ooh, in quotations.
Yes, 6.0 in quotations.
Makes me wonder exactly what it is. Now, I'm going to ask, but I don't know if I want the answer of what you would give it if you if there were no quotations there. And I know you gave all those like the caveats.
Yeah.
But my part or my heart wants to know if you saw one in one of these Chinese places.
Yeah.
What do you think you can give it?
Like China?
Yeah. Did I say Chinese places? I meant like a place in China. Yeah, you're right. I want to go to a Chinese place like Sichuan or maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to experience it for myself.
Okay, all right, that's fair. That's fair.
I wouldn't deign to guesstimate on that.
Yeah, that's fair.
As it is, that was our review of the Chinese windmill palm. Casey, it's time for a game, a returning classic, a fan favorite. This is Who Can It Tree Now? 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 Here's how it works, Casey. I am thinking of a tree.
Okay.
You have 10 questions and 7 minutes.
Oh, Alex.
To deduct what tree I am thinking of.
You mean deduce.
Yes.
Hmm.
You may ask yes or no questions.
Okay.
I will be selecting this tree from the iconic David Allen Sibley Guide to Trees.
Okay. Okay. I'm ready, although I don't know what the tree is yet.
No. Damn. That's the game.
I was hoping to try and trick you.
I have a tree in mind. Would you please remove your headphones and plug your ears and hum a little tune away from your mic? The tree I'm thinking of is the myrtle oak, Quercus myrtifolia. Okay, Casey. That was a little Zen tune you were humming to yourself.
Yeah, a little loud for a Zen tune.
Casey, I'm going to set my timer.
Okay. Can I see the timer? Can you set it up so I can see it?
Oh, sure. Sure thing. Sure thing.
Well, we can both see it, maybe.
I don't think so, because we're sitting parallel
like
to
that.
Each other.
Okay, I'll let you know the time. Wait, you haven't even started yet. It started already. This is so unfair.
Yeah, well.
Wow, okay. All right. Is it a...
You spent time saying...
Is it a conifer, Alex?
It is not a conifer.
Sorry. Okay. There's one.
You're so competitive. It's so weird to see you like this.
okay. Is it... Opposite or deciduously, I'm sorry, if it's opposite or alternately arranged leaves.
I believe they are.
Actually, that was not a yes or no question, Alex. I apologize.
Oh.
Is it opposite?
No.
Okay. Now, I just, because I've been burned on this before.
Yeah.
Are you sure that this is not the leaflets that you're looking at? It might say in the description.
I am looking at a... illustration of the of a twig of this tree,
uh-huh,
and the leaves coming off of it,
yeah,
the buds,
uh-huh,
and the leaves,
okay,
are not opposite.
They are alternate. Okay.
I didn't say that.
Are the leaves are the leaves compound leaves?
They are not.
Okay, so we got simple. We have alternate. You're not making it easy for me. is the fruit edible?
Yes.
Ooh. Is a fruit edible for Alex Croson and Casey Clapp?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm giving you a lot with my facial sort of.
Yeah, I'm seeing.
I'm
that.
Emoting.
I'm seeing where the answer is yes, but I'm also getting an idea that it's not technically yes. But I see what you're doing.
It is technically yes.
Okay. All right. Technically
it
yes.
It may not
but
be
like,
practically yes.
Yeah. Practically yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So it's simple. It's alternate. Is it? Does it grow higher than 80 feet?
No.
It's a short tree-ish, shortish tree. Is it in the rose family?
It is not.
Okay. All right. So I'm at 6 questions now, I believe.
Yes, you have 4 questions to go and 4 minutes and 25 seconds.
Yep.
How about that?
Okay, there we go. Got 1 minute basically each question. Okay, so...
Good math.
Is the... does this tree have thorns?
It does not.
Ooh, I am not going to get this one. Simple, edible, but not really practically edible.
Mm-hmm.
Are the leaves big or, are the leaves big? And big would be defined as maybe like larger than 6 inches.
No.
They're small leaves. Okay, so we got simple. We got alternate. We got it's a semi-short tree. It does not have thorns. Its leaves are not very big. It's got kind of small leaves.
Correct.
Okay. This is hard, Alex. You got 3 minutes and 3 questions.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm trying to do is think it through. I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to start narrowing it down.
So what are your options now?
The leaf shape. Does the leaf have lobes or any other kind of serrations? Deep serrations.
No.
Okay, so it is a simple entire leaf, alternately arranged on a medium-sized tree, probably growing somewhere in North America. Its fruit is semi-edible. Is this... It's not in the rose family. Right, so...
2 questions remain.
Yeah, 2 questions. So can I ask these 2 questions and then guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
So, let's see. Perhaps... The next question would be about the fruit. It's not going to be that. It's not going to be that. What about, is it native to the southeastern United States?
It is.
It is. All right.
TikTok, Mr. Clap.
Who said that? Johnny, are you here?
It's Johnny. Oh no.
God. I thought we fired that guy. Okay, one last question. It's native to that southeastern United States.
Sure is.
It does not have compound leaves. Its leaves are simple.
1 question.
Have we covered this on an episode of Completely Arbitrary?
We have not.
We have not. Oh, man, that really threw me off.
You have a minute and 45 seconds.
Okay, I'm going to talk you through what I'm thinking.
Okay.
So it's native to the southeast. We can eat it, but we also don't eat it very much, is my guess. Because I don't think it's something that you would say is edible that you and I could eat, but just can't because it's not here. I think it's more that, like, man, it's not going to kill us, but yeah, we would eat it. But would we eat it? Nah.
Good deduction.
It is a small to medium-sized tree. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get very big. Its leaves are simple, alternate, and entire margins, or nearly so. At least there's not any big, serrations or anything like that. So mm-hmm. That means it's like not an oak tree. I don't think it's a maple tree because that's not an alternate. It's not a walnut. It's not a hickory. The tree would be edible, so it can't be it's not like a willow, and it's not a pawpaw, anything like that. 30 seconds?
40 seconds.
40 seconds. So, honestly, I'm trying to rack my brain with a tree that's native to the southeast that we would be able to eat, but not really, like, enjoy eating, and that is meets all those requirements. And I am, honestly, coming up short.
Wow.
I really am not sure what this tree is.
Do you resign?
I don't resign because I have 18 seconds and I'm just going to make a guess. It's also not in the rose family, which kind of shuts down a whole bunch of things. Okay. It's a little kind of fruit tree. It makes something that's not very good. Oh.
5 seconds.
5 seconds. Alex, I resign. I don't know. I can't think of what this tree is. I'm just going to try and venture a guess real fast. I'm going to see if I can just come up with something. Is it a sassafras?
It is not, Casey.
Oh, yeah, because we already come. Oh, darn it.
Now, Casey.
That was such a good guess or good question.
As you were saying, it's not this, it's not this.
Yeah.
You said it's not an oak.
Yeah.
And that was curious to me. I wonder if I missed something or if I misinterpreted one of these illustrations. Casey, no. It is an oak.
Oh, son of a gun.
It is in the Quercus family.
Okay, see, that's on me because genus. Usually Quercus doesn't have simple leaves, but you're right, Alex, it could be.
Casey, the tree in question was
uh-huh.
The myrtle oak.
The myrtle oak.
Quercus myrtifolia.
Oh, Alex. Every now and then you do us a really good job. Everyone who got that right, 10 stars. I've actually never been involved in that tree.
You've never been involved in it?
Nope.
Way to say that.
Thank you. never have I ever read that name in that book and had it stick in my brain.
Also called the shrub oak, because it's very small and shrub-like.
Small and shrub-like.
But it is a tree.
Son of a gun, Alex. Well done. I think I'm like 50-50 on those.
Yeah, you've done a pretty good job, Case. And I picked a stumper today. No pun intended. As always, your process was well thought out. You skipped over that one qualifier.
Yep, and there it is.
And there's your Achilles heel.
I was really expecting you to be like, and, well, you suck. And I was like, wow.
I would never,
Alex,
say such a thing. Casey, that was Who Can It Tree Now? It remains a mystery. It is time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question is from Emily Price. Dear Casey and Alex, writes Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
I came across this article and thought it might be an interesting topic for discussion. Emily then linked to a Scientific American article titled, Botanical Sexism Cultivates Homegrown Allergies. I don't know how prevalent it is, and being from the UK, I don't know if this is mainly a US problem or a worldwide one. Would love to hear your thoughts on this topic. Casey, botanical sexism.
Well, now this is something I've heard a few times, and I've read some articles about it, or just read some opinions about it, perhaps is more accurate.
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar.
Well, Alex, without reading the article, which we'll have linked in our show notes, the idea being, if you have two different kinds of trees, particularly one that is a species that is dioecious. You have male plants and female plants.
Sure.
The male plants will produce the pollen.
Uh-huh.
The female plants will produce the fruit that pollen then fertilizes, and then rather the seed, and then the fruit will develop after that.
Right.
So that is where this is kind of all coming from. And over the years, everyone who lives in a place has been like, I hate getting apples. I hate the fruit that comes from a tree. It's very bothersome. It creates havoc. Imagine having a gigantic oak tree over a plaza. Every good mast year, that oak tree then just rains down acorns across this plaza. Or the quintessential example is the ginkgo, where the female ginkgo creates the fruit that smells literally like vomit.
That's right.
So everyone's like, well, I really want to plant ginkgos, but I don't want to plant one that smells like vomit every year around fall.
Mm.
So the powers that be, mostly in the nursery trade, as well as in trades that are in plant breeding, have done two things. One, created triploid plants that are not able to reproduce. They just kind of, they don't reproduce. Whether that is because their genes don't work and then their fruit is aborted before it becomes big, or if it just doesn't produce it. And you get like the seedless grape kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
But then you also get people who said, well, why don't we just breed male plants, and then we can cull out the female plants, only sell the male plants, and then they will not have fruit.
A reverse Jurassic Park.
What do you mean?
In Jurassic Park, all the dinosaurs are female.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they can't reproduce.
Gotcha, yes. Perfect example. Now, I have chickens on the land where I live, and a chicken who switched its sex. And apparently this happens in chickens. And then we had a rooster, and that rooster was fertilizing other eggs.
No kidding.
Chickens and other birds being dinosaurs, I would think that having a bunch of female dinosaurs, one of those dinosaurs is just going to be like, I'm just going to switch over, and then they'll start to...
I believe that is one of the plot points in Jurassic
You're
Park.
You're kidding
right?
me.
Yeah, they find eggs.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Perfect. So anyway, sorry.
Don't frogs also do that?
This is a good question. I don't know.
Frogs
probably
can switch sex.
I think so. Yeah. I think it happens. I mean, ginkgos do this. It happens everywhere in nature. Mm. Like it is. That happens. The idea of sex and gender and all that kind of thing in terms of any living thing is quite fluid and is not a cut and dry, as we've talked about on this program before.
Yeah.
So in this case, again, it's not that cut and dry either, but the big thing is people have given it this term, botanical sexism, and they say because of botanical sexism, we only plant men trees. Because we only plant these male trees, we then get a bunch of pollen, and then somewhere I read that someone sent over to us that then if you have only male trees producing pollen, then all that they're actually producing more pollen because they have to compete with other trees, which is just patently false. Trees don't do that. They don't know if there's more or less. They have to be more bravado, you know, produce more pollen. So that is not true, but you do have, if you say only plant male ginkgos along a street, all those male ginkgos are going to produce pollen. Where if you had maybe half and half, only half would produce pollen, the other half would produce the seeds, and those would not produce pollen. So over the years of this happening, you've gotten cities that have gotten a huge influx of male trees that don't produce fruit. Now, that is the idea. Does that kind of make sense generally? So here's my big problem with it. Most trees we plant are not dioecious. Most of them are monoecious trees.
Which means that one tree has both sex organs on it.
Yes, exactly. Or I would rather say has either...
sex organs?
No, not really. Yeah. You could, though. I think it's very analogous. That's not a problem.
One tree creates pollen and seeds.
Exactly. Yes,
like
precisely.
A conifer.
Exactly. So you have your seed plants or your pollen-bearing plants, and then you have your egg or seed plants.
Yeah.
So you also have perfect flowers that produce both, and they the like a magnolia.
Magnolia.
But then there are others that have only flowers that make pollen, only flowers that receive pollen. So the vast majority of our trees are not one or the other.
Yeah.
We certainly have done this, but it is adding the term botanical sexism, in my opinion, is a it's a big flashy headline that people are going to be like, what? And they're going to click on, and then they're going to read through it, and it sounds plausible, but it also like taps into a really intense cultural issue that we're having here and conflates them.
Yeah.
And I don't like that because, A, it was not men who were like, we're going to only plant these kinds of trees. Everyone was like, we hate having ginkgos that smell like vomit. Oh, here's a solution. And they made the solution. And then people are like, well, now why am I so so congested all the time? Like, why is pollen count so high? And I've said this before and I'll say it again. It's probably mostly grass. Like, grasses cause a vast majority of the pollen that people deal with. In my understanding, I will look into this further.
Okay.
But grasses cause a huge amount of pollen. Every other plant that exists in a given space creates a huge amount of pollen.
Hmm.
So just saying that it's a subset of trees that are dioecious, which we have chosen the ones that create the littlest mess to plant in our urban areas, to choose those ones and then conflate this issue with this really kind of hot button issue, which has been around. I think this specific article came out, I think, in 2015. Yeah, 2015. Mm. So it's been around for a while, but it, and still, in my opinion, it conflates two issues. And one just isn't quite, it just doesn't quite match up, where I am fully in the camp that there is sexism that is underlying almost everything about our culture that causes a huge amount of problems. And that is either unknowingly or knowingly perpetuated. Versus the tree plant one, I don't know if it quite rises up to, some cabal of nursery people who have said, yeah, listen, we're only going to plant male trees because they're better.
Yeah, I think it's a little reductive and undermines actual human sexism, which is like a huge problem everywhere.
Exactly.
And is the root of like real suffering.
Yeah.
I think it's a silly term. I kind of agree with you that it's like it's potentially like supposed to be it's a little clickbaity. It's supposed to poke at you,
yeah,
so that you read more about it.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Guess, maybe.
Yeah, and it totally does. But and then in this, it specifically cultivates homegrown allergies. It's like, well, sure, yeah, but you know, I doubt that it's only those trees that are causing you problems. It may be. Maybe you live on a block that's filled with male trees in a specific way.
Yeah.
But my bet is if you do live on that block, A, you're lucky enough you live on that block. B, you're also unlucky that maybe you just have intense allergies. Thirdly, it also is very likely you're getting a normal amount of pollen from a normal monoecious tree that's growing next to you.
Right.
So it's like, go out there and identify those trees and do that study and tell me that it is explicitly these trees that are out there. And I will read through this and maybe we'll talk in this more at more length on a Patreon. But they do have several different citations in here. That I was curious to read, but just we didn't have time this time.
Yeah.
But also, I've heard about this for years now. So that is my opinion, and that is kind of what answers. So I hope that kind of goes into it a little bit for Emily.
Thank you, Emily, for your question.
Do let us know what you think about this, because it is hot button, and I know that we all want to be as open and listening as possible. So I just want to be a little bit concerned that it's a hot button issue that's not an actual hot button issue, you know?
It's a cold button issue wearing a hot button issue's mask.
Yes. Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Join us on Instagram at arbitrarypod, or if you want to support the podcast with a little bit of money and get tons of bonus content, join the Patreon for $5 a month. You can join the Arboretum and get 2 bonus episodes a month. I think we're up to like 35 episodes on the Patreon now, Casey.
I think so, something like that. It's pretty
good
amount.
A lot of bonus content, I would say. That's probably worth $5. You can listen to it all and then cancel the next month.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Actually, as you say that, Alex, the value goes up every single month.
Great point.
Yeah. So it actually technically it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Wonderful. But only if you start later. Anyway, let's not get into this economic conundrum here.
Or you can join the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist in your mailbox, your actual mailbox, every month. It's a lot of fun. Casey Clapp.
Alex Tristan.
Speaking of a lot of fun, I've had a lot of fun with you today recording this episode of Completely Arbitrary.
I have had fun.
Wow. Today. Back with the air quotes. I'm not going to read into that.
Don't do it.
Yes, a controversial episode, a controversial tree, but an interesting topic, I would say.
I think so, too. We'll be back next week, maybe with another tree.
Surprise. No air quotes on that one. Thank you for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.